Welcome back to HealthLink On Air, produced each week by SUNY Upstate Medical University, making the academic difference in healthcare in the Central New York community. This is your host, Tricia Torrey, every patient's advocate, joined this morning by Dr. Gregory Eastwood, professor of bioethics and humanities at SUNY Upstate, and Bonnie Braddock, certified genetic counselor. We're talking about personalized medicine, and you know, Dr. Eastwood, I feel like I have a good relationship with my doctor. I've been getting personalized medicine for years. That's not really what we're talking about, is it?
I think personalized medicine is something that's been appropriated to apply to this relatively new concept of focusing on individuals personally in view of their genetic makeup.
And well, you know, I look at medicine that's been around for a very long time, and basically you get tested and you react to the testing.
Right.
And this is getting tested and it's reacting to the testing, but at a much deeper level, where medicines are no longer one size fits all. It's a medicine for you, or it's a genetic decision for you. And so, Bonnie, at what point do you come in that's different from just the one size fits all?
Well, I think where we come in, first of all, is before the testing is even done.
Ah.
Because an individual needs to understand what their risk is,
mm-hmm.
Understand if that risk is important to them in making decisions about whether or not they feel it's appropriate to undergo genetic testing.
You know, that goes back to one of these themes we've had in our ethical discussions of everybody makes their own decision. Mm-hmm. Dr. Eastwood, to what extent is this about individual choice?
Well, it's a lot about individual choice, providing the individual is well-informed. In this country, in fact, in almost all of Western society, we place a high value on what we call autonomy. In other words, a person being able to make their own choices. And we see that throughout our lives, not just in medicine.
Right, and that's actually a cultural thing in the United States, isn't it? Or in, mm-hmm. in the Americas, for, perhaps, because maybe in some Asian countries, there's not so much autonomy expected.
Well, that's an interesting subject. I deal with this a lot in bioethics, dealing with sick patients and so on. And that's true. In Asian cultures, there is a focus on the individual, but that focus is more on the individual in the context of his or her family or close friends and group.
Well, and actually it takes it back a little bit to what we're talking about, if we're talking about family, and it actually then raises some of the bigger questions. And these are the ethical questions that we really want to get into this morning. We're not going to try to solve them for anyone, but we want to give them an idea of what the pros and cons and the different sides of the stories are. So let's take this to something like, suppose I have some genetic testing or someone in my family has a disease. Let's take something like Huntington's disease, because I do know there's a gene that you can identify. Somebody gets tested, they find out that they are maybe going to develop Huntington's disease, and then they start thinking maybe their children could. Bonnie, what are the questions involved there?
Well, I think the question to start with is if an individual wants to know that information. And there may be several reasons why somebody may or may not want to know. An individual may want to know because, oh, it's something that's been in my family. I've been thinking about it for so long. I just can't deal with the uncertainty.
And do they think that there are perhaps steps that can stave it off? They won't develop it at all?
Well, I don't think we're there yet
for Huntington's
disease. For mm-hmm. certain other genetic diseases, we are there yet.
Okay.
In terms of risk reduction or prevention.
All right.
Other reasons people may want to go down the road of genetic testing is to obtain information regarding risk to their children
mm-hmm.
or other family members.
Okay. We were talking earlier before we started with our microphones about listeners know that there's Alzheimer's disease in my family. Is there a possibility for me to get tested to find out whether or not I would develop Alzheimer's disease? And do I want to know? Would I live my life differently? That's another one of the ethical questions we ask, isn't it?
Well, it certainly is. And Alzheimer's is a good example of a disease not like Huntington's disease, which in Huntington's disease case, it's one gene, one disease. And if you have it, have the gene, then you have Huntington's disease.
Mm-hmm.
But with Alzheimer's and most other genetic predispositions, it's not a single gene usually. It is it's multiple genes. There have been several genes associated with risk for Alzheimer's. Risk doesn't mean you're going to get Alzheimer's.
Right. And we also know there are some things we can do to prevent it, put it off, or at least minimize the chance of developing it. And that's different from Huntington's as well, isn't it?
That's correct.
All right, let's talk about some of the legal aspects, you know, another ethical kind of a thing. If we start talking about testing people's genetic information, who gets that information and can decisions be made? Can insurance turn me down because I've had genetic testing? Can employer not hire me because I've had genetic testing that has shown I might be prone to something? Do you run into that at all, Bonnie?
Well, we've traditionally run into that question very frequently. People, there's been a tradition of some fear about individuals having genetic testing because they may not be employable or they may have problems with their health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
In reality, there are different laws statewide that provide protections. Mm-hmm. We're lucky that traditionally in New York State, we've had pretty good protection against mm-hmm. employment and health insurance discrimination. More recently, last spring, the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act, mm-hmm. or what we call GINA, was signed, mm-hmm. which provides federal protection. So it unifies the provides a unifying source of protection against health insurers or employers using genetic information as a pre-existing condition.
And it really is based on the whole idea of non-discrimination, just like discrimination is illegal, having to do with somebody's color, having somebody to do with someone's gender or religion, those kinds of things. All right, what about, we have to talk about the life spectrum. Getting tested when you're a child might be different from being tested as an adult, or what about even before the child is born?
Well, that raises a lot of issues, Tricia, and I know that that's why you asked the question.
No, that's right.
But this raises the idea of designer babies, or if not designer babies, identifying something that you as a parent may not want in your child and doing something about it.
Choosing the gender. We hear about people trying to choose the gender of a child.
Well, I think that's very common. I was telling you earlier about my experience with my own daughter and son-in-law who practice obstetrics and gynecology, and this is an issue where people want to have a boy or sometimes a girl. For better or for worse, it's usually they want to have a boy.
Mm-hmm.
They want to know early in pregnancy, and we have the techniques to determine that now. Mm-hmm. We can do amniocentesis and identify a lot of things, including gender.
And that's a scary kind of a thing, isn't it? It's a very slippery slope. And again, mm-hmm. that's why it's an ethical question. But you don't have those kinds of folks coming to you, do you, Bonnie?
No, well, there is the whole arena of prenatal genetics or even preconception before pregnancy occurs to determine if a couple is at risk of having a particular genetic disorder based on family history or age or ethnicity. I think that one tool that is used is looking at family history. That's such an important tool, and it's very basic.
Mm-hmm.
And physicians do this on a routine basis.
They
and
do.
That will screen out who may be at higher risk, and then couples can seek genetic counseling if they are at increased risk to know what their options are.
And make some of their decisions from there. And again, it's going to vary from family to family the way they're going to make those decisions. That's the autonomy question. Yeah. All right, now what about somebody who develops a certain disease? Do we have the science yet to say, person A developed colon cancer, and based on his or her genetic testing, we are now going to treat it this way, versus person B who's developed the same disease, colon cancer, but because their genetics are this way, we're going to treat them differently. Are we there yet, Dr. Eastwood?
Well, we're about there. This gets into the area of pharmacogenetics,
mm-hmm.
Which means that we do know already that people vary in their ability to handle certain drugs and medications.
Sure, and that would be why a woman perhaps who's being treated for breast cancer one way, another woman treated the identical way at the identical stage doesn't have the same outcome.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
And so wouldn't it be nice if we could tell in advance of prescribing a medication, particularly the ones that are very toxic, like treatment for breast cancer,
mm-hmm.
wouldn't it be nice if we could identify a person's ability, genetic ability, to handle certain medications, whether they're sensitive, whether they need a lower dose or a higher dose?
Mm-hmm.
And we know a lot about that already, but that really is not in practice widely now.
Not yet.
Mm-hmm.
But that raises the question then, and Bonnie, I'm going to ask you, if Charles Darwin didn't really know what genes were, but he could talk about evolution 200 years ago, and now we have this body of knowledge today, we've identified the human genome, and we're starting to talk about personalized medicine. Fast forward 200 years, what are we going to be talking about then?
Well, I think we'll be in a place where we can address the more common diseases. Mm-hmm. So we have in genetics, we can test for over 1,000 different types of genes, but they really don't address the diseases that most people get in the general population or that can help us reduce the risk or pick the disease up earlier. So for the common diseases like breast cancer, colon cancer, if we're talking about cancers, most individuals who develop these diseases don't carry the high-risk genes that we can test for right now. But we're really on the forefront of identifying the more common but lower risk genes that may act in combination with other genes or other lifestyle or environment.
So how they all interact together and so forth.
So we may have a better understanding of what the behavior is. Uh-huh. Even if we can identify a gene with the Human Genome Project, doesn't mean we know what it does or how it behaves in context with everything else about us.
Right. And Dr. Eastwood, how would you answer that question? What do you predict? Get out your crystal ball.
Yeah, it may not take 200 years, but it'll be sometime in the future. And I'm thinking of stem cells and the ability that stem cells may have to change, to make new organs or change organs that already exist. One idea that just popped into my mind, can we change a pig's liver so it can fit into a human
genetically, or something like that? Which, once again, raises another ethical question, and we're going to leave it at that because what it does is introduces 10 more shows we can have on this very topic. Well, Dr. Gregory Eastwood, I thank you so much. You have been invaluable in helping us understand these questions. And Bonnie, certainly the genetic testing, we're going to have you back. We had you here a year or two ago to talk about how it's done, and I think that would be another great conversation as well. Thanks so much to both of you. Listeners, if you have additional questions, you may have stories to share, or suggest additional of these types of ethical conundrums, we want to make it easy for you to do that. At the end of this morning's show, we're going to give you some phone numbers and mailing addresses and so forth so that you can participate in the conversations. I suggest you get yourself a pencil. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back shortly. This is SUNY Upstate's HealthLink on Air on 570 WSYR.